in the seventh and final aliyah of Parshas Toldos. So we are told about Esav's marriage to a woman identified as Machlas, the daughter of Yishmael. However, the Talmud Yerushalmi in Maseches Bikurim tells us that really her name was not Machlas, but actually Basmas, and the idea of referring to her as Machlas is to convey a message that one who gets married is a recipient of a Mechilas Avonos, receives an atonement for his sins, an idea that Chazal expressed in a number of places, and sometimes grouping it with others, such as a Gershon Iskayer, and an Ola Legedula, somebody who takes on greater responsibility. All of these people get their averos forgiven. And it's a fascinating idea, especially here in this context. And it's a topic of much discussion as to why it is. Why should there be a kapara for someone who gets married? It could be that indeed connecting it to the other categories is a way of saying that one who takes on greater responsibilities should indeed be credited with a clean slate and have all his averos forgiven. There are other interpretations as well. The Ksav Sofer, in his commentary to the Torah, suggests that this is connected to the idea that somebody who gets married is taking on greater protection against other temptations, and therefore it's itself an act of tshuva and should be credited as such. Others point to the fact that it's a mitzvah to get married, and it's the Ratzon Hashem, and therefore one who is engaged in a mitzvah of such significance, this is also the source of Yishuv HaOlam, you're populating the world, you're doing something of tremendous importance, so therefore there should be a kapara that's connected to that. It's a point that's pointed out by the Tshuvas Hesaris Tshuva, in his Tshuvas and Evan Ezer and Simon Chafei. Others suggest that there is a completion that takes place in the Ha'aris, in the bottom of the Sardis Tshuva, was written by his grandson, by the Ikve Sofer. So he notes that the idea that one is not complete until he gets married, therefore, if one is indeed becoming a whole person, so it makes sense that there should be a new slate, there should be a fresh start. This is an idea that Maharal also has, that the person becomes completely renewed through marriage, and therefore that would be appropriate, that one should have a new start in all ways, and a kapara for their previous averos. So this has an impact, lahalacha, the idea that there's kind of a personal Yom Kippur that comes along with the marriage, so that's why there is a practice, as the Pesachei Tshuva notes, to say vidui on the wedding day. And this could also be connected to the minhag that is prevalent, especially in Ashkenazi circles, of fasting on the day of the wedding. Rav Avi Yosef writes in his Shuvas that this was not a practice that is prevalent in Sephardi circles, but it certainly is very found in Ashkenazi circles. And there is discussion as to where it comes from. The Ramah refers to this in a few places, and on the side of the page, the Shulchan Aruch, you have the Magen Avraham in Aruch Chaim, and the Beis Shmuel in Eben Ezer, and they both quote from the Maharam Mintz two possible theories as to why it is that there has developed this custom to fast on the wedding day. And one suggestion is that it's connected to this idea of a personal kapara, that if there is going to be forgiveness, so it makes sense to fast, just as one does on Yom Kippur, to connect to that forgiveness. The other theory that he brings is that it's very practical in nature, a whole different kind of explanation, and that we're concerned that the chasen shouldn't become intoxicated. Why exactly we're concerned about that requires some explanation, is the fear that it's somehow going to impact the process of Kedushin, the proper das that's required for Kedushin. So there are various ways of explaining it, but it surrounds this idea that we're concerned about intoxication, and therefore to make sure that you don't get drunk, so we keep far away from that possibility by saying shouldn't eat or drink at all, and that will hopefully prevent drunkenness. So the fact that you have these two theories, there's a third theory as well. The Rokeach understood that it's connected to the idea of not eating before doing a mitzvah that is present and obligated upon you at the time. So just as we don't eat before tikiyah shofar. We don't eat before taking a lulav. So too, at the time when the mitzvah of getting married is now active and present, so you wouldn't eat before performing that mitzvah. It's a third perspective, but these different attitudes as to what exactly is the basis for the fast, so there are various nafkaminas. So, for example, the question of what happens if one gets married in the middle of the day. So should the fast continue so that it should be a complete fast even until dark, even past the chuppah, or is it sufficient just to fast until the chuppah? So if the point is just to avoid drunkenness, it would be enough just to fast until the chuppah, but if it's about having a full day of kapara, then perhaps it should go longer to have an entire day of fasting. The other way around, the question could also come up when the chuppah takes place after dark, so should the fast continue until then? If we're trying to make sure that the chassan stays sober, so then it would seem to make sense to keep going until the chuppah, even if the day has already been completed. But if the idea is to have a full fast for a kapara, so it could be once the day is over, so then that should be enough. Although that would indicate, really, that the fast is actually taking place on a different day of the wedding, which is something to notice, and that may actually be significant, because sometimes the question comes up that it may be hard for the chassan or the kala to fast on the day of the wedding, and the question comes up, are there any leniencies that are available? So you could take note of the fact that if the idea is to have a kapara, it doesn't necessarily have to mean that it has to actually be the same day as the wedding. It could mean that the fast could take place close to the wedding and be effective as an active tshuva before the wedding, even if it's not necessarily the same day. So if the chassan and kala are worried about what's the impact going to be of fasting on their wedding day, it might be advisable to fast on a day that's close to the wedding, and that will still allow them to be in a more refreshed state on the wedding day itself. One could also suggest, which is a little bit different than what is commonly practiced, that if one gets married on a day when we don't fast, such as Rosh Chodesh or Hanukkah, and usually the attitude is, okay, so then just to skip the fast completely, perhaps a better suggestion might be that instead of giving up on this very cherished minhag Yisrael, that it'd be a good idea to have a fast on an earlier day and to fulfill this notion of getting a full kapara and doing an active tshuva close to the wedding. Pick a day that is close to the wedding that isn't a day that's inappropriate to fast, however far back you have to go. And then on the day of the wedding, just eat lightly so as to avoid intoxication. There are a few other nafkaminas that emerge from how to understand the nature of the fast. Among them is the question of whether a shliach l'kiddushin should fast. That if we assume that it's connected to the kapara, so presumably it's the chassan who's getting the kapara, but if the idea is that it's so that the one performing the kiddushin should maintain his sobriety and his sound mind, so then it would be the one who's actually carrying it out, and therefore perhaps the shliach l'kiddushin should be the one to fast. It could perhaps also affect the question of whether there needs to be a Kabbalah the day before. Normally, if one takes on a fast, so the Gemara says that it's required that he be mekabel the fast the day before. So if it's a fast that is for that purpose of a kapara, so then it would seem to need a kabbalah. But if it's a more practically oriented fast, that it's just about not becoming drunk, so then that wouldn't necessarily seem to require a kabbalah. And that may also emerge. It's also relevant, especially to those who wonder if they feel it's difficult to fast on the day of the wedding. So is there a distinction to be drawn between the chassan and the kala? So for example, if it's the kala asking the question, so is there any difference as far as how the minig treats the kala? So here, it happens to be that the original source that talks about this, if you look in the Ramah and the Marimins, so they do note that both the chassan and the kala do fast. But nonetheless, dealing with it more abstractly, the later Sfarim consider the question of whether the fast is equally obligatory on both the chassan and the kala, and they have to consider each one of these angles, that if we assume that it's connected to the kapara, so does the kapara apply equally to the chassan and kala? So that itself connects to the question of why is there a kapara? What is the kapara based on? So that requires a its own analysis. If the idea is that it's so that we can maintain sobriety and that that shouldn't impact on the Kiddushin, so is the role of the Chasen and Kala the same in terms of the Kiddushin? So they require consent, but is that the same type of das? So that's itself a discussion. And if we assume that it's connected to the mitzvah, either because that's itself the source of the kapara, or because of the rokech's idea that we don't want to eat before performing a mitzvah, so then we have to discuss the question of to what extent is the kala part of the mitzvah per se of kiddushin, which is itself its own discussion. So there's a lot that's considered about how exactly to apply this minig, because poskim understand that every valid minig is really a reflection of a halachic concept. So we don't take it casually. We don't assume that whatever is done, but rather there is a basis for it and that it connects to the logic that the minig is meant to represent. And indeed, that's what you find in all of the halachic discussions that surround this practice. But one important question that connects back to the Aliyah itself is, how do we understand the idea that there is a kapara? So is that automatic, a get-out-of-jail-free card, that one who gets married is forgiven for all his averos? Or do we assume that it's actually an opportunity for a kapara, but it's not automatic, it's connected to tshuva? So if we're assuming that there's an idea of fasting, so that seems to indicate that it's really connected to tshuva, that it's not automatic, because if it was automatic, you wouldn't necessarily have to fast. You should just have the party, which indeed you do have at the wedding, but that should be all that you need just to celebrate the exoneration that one gets without having to do anything else. But if there's a notion of fasting, so then that seems to suggest that it's not a automatic kapara, but it's tied into tshuva. So that itself really brings up the question of why it is that we're taught about this idea specifically in the context of Esav, that if it's Esav's marriage that teaches us about this notion of a Mechilas Avonos that is given to a Chasen, so what does that tell us about Esav's own path? Are we to assume that Esav did tshuva? Are we to assume that it's irrelevant, that the kapara comes one way or another? Did Esav himself get this kapara? Or are we just being told about the concept in connection to this kapara? So this is a topic that is part of the whole analysis of the whole theme and of its various implications. And there is an interesting comment here from the Oznayim LaTorah, who suggests that the reason this is taught specifically in the context of Esav is really to make two points. One point is that it applies even to a Russia of the nature of Esav, even to a unsavory character of that type, but that there has to be at least some gesture towards tshuva. And the idea that there was at least that, so here we know that Esav recognized that his parents were unhappy with his marriages beforehand, and he's trying to do better, even though it's not clear if he's helping anything, especially because he may have remained married to the wives who his parents were unhappy about. So the idea that he was actually doing any successful act of tshuva is unclear, but perhaps at least a gesture towards tshuva might be enough to trigger this idea of a kapara. And that's itself a very interesting idea, which, just to close off, we could perhaps connect this to the beginning of the parsha. So we mentioned a little bit earlier that when the Torah tells us in the first Aliyah that Yitzchak had this love for Esav, which requires explanation. Does it seem that he was fooled by Esav, that he was taken in by Esav? So the first Aliyah tells us Kitzayid Befiv, which makes it sound like he was just appreciative of Esav's ability to hunt and to provide him with food. Chazal tell us another level there, that Esav was very crafty and pretended to be pious and religious and would ask him halachic questions, which he didn't really care about, but it was a way of looking as if he was such a tzaddik, and therefore the Pasuk is conveying that his mouth was used for hunting in that sense, to be duplicitous and to try to trick his father, and apparently to have some success. So perhaps there is a more charitable way of interpreting it. There's a fascinating discussion about this in a recently printed sefer of the Torah of Rav Shmuel Barenbaum, the Mirror of Shishiva, where he suggests, somewhat along the lines of some thoughts we've mentioned in the earlier aliyahs, that the idea that Yitzchak loved Esav, Kitzai Befiv, was not that he was taken in and that he was fooled, but that he recognized that Esav required this extra attention, and that he saw some spark there that he could cultivate. And what was that spark? It was that desire to please, that even if Esav did everything else wrong, but at least he wanted to impress his father, and that was something that he could hold on to and that he could nourish. And therefore, he chose actively, Ve'ahav, he chose actively to shower love on Esav as an effort to try to cultivate this midah and to recognize that it's something that could be grown and could be developed into something more positive. At least that was the hope, and that was the idea and the goal of the love that Yitzchak directed towards Esav, specifically Kitzayit Befiv. And it's a fascinating presentation that Barenbaum has there, that even though we normally recommend unconditional love, but he suggests that there is an advantage specifically to having something to focus on, because it shows that the parent is actually paying attention to the child and recognizes their genuine attributes and that it's meaningful and that it's not just something that they say. So the fact that Yitzchak was able to say, okay, here's something that you're good at, and this is something that you try to bring towards Kiburav, so I can recognize that, and I can compliment that, and I can encourage that. And that was an effort to try to develop Esav in a positive way. And perhaps we see that there was some impact, that there was some result, and that's what we're seeing here, that even if Esav was unsuccessful in his efforts towards tshuva, and even if there's so much to criticize and there's so much that went wrong and so much that can be blamed on Esav, but there is some gesture, even as feeble as it may have been, but some gesture towards trying to do better, and that is rooted in his wish to try to please his father, even if, again, it is lacking in so many ways. But that slight movement in a positive direction is something to take note of, and that is significant enough, perhaps, that can be a source of Mechilas Avonos and can be a model for all of us to find how we can have a Mechilas Avonos just by moving in the right direction in the tiniest bit. And that itself is perhaps the result of the successful plan of Yitzchak to direct love towards him, because he saw that desire to please him, even mixed in with everything else, is a spark of positivity that he could nourish and hope that it may turn into something better.